What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and it is not a post-playoff clinching edition of the show, thanks to the dastardly LA Kings last night at Rogers Arena, preventing the Canucks from clinching that playoff berth. They'll have another chance to do it on Thursday against the Dallas Stars. We got a lot to get into today, so let's just get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
As mentioned, the Canucks do not clinch a playoff spot. They lose 3-2 to the LA Kings at Rogers Arena last night. Kings went up 3-1 late in the second, and then in the third period, just a complete lack of offensive punch from the Canucks for the first 15 minutes until they actually pulled the goalie. Brock Besser scores a bouncer off of Anze Kopitar's skate to make it 3-2. A little bit of a flurry after that, but that is the final score. So regulation loss for the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, we have three games now against the LA Kings. There's a lot of angles to this, right? Because obviously they failed to clinch a playoff spot. But I think the most interesting one is just with a three-game sample now, and all recent, right, all over the last 4 weeks or so here against the LA Kings, I have seen a lot of concern, I think understandably so, about the style that LA plays and the problems it has given the Canucks so far in these three matchups.
So two buckets here, okay? There's the concern about the style LA plays, mm-hmm. as like the moral play of like the morality play,
well,
of like
okay,
the
1-3-1
is ruining hockey.
That's not what I was talking about.
Okay, because I have time for that.
But we, like, look, it's not entertaining. I would prefer to watch another style of hockey, but I also get, like, the name of the game is winning. So teams are going to do what they think they need to do to win. That's fine.
We've seen teams play a 1-3-1 and be entertaining. Like, did you find the Tampa Bay Lightning boring? Because they were a regular 1-3-1 team,
mm-hmm.
as they racked up playoff series wins. Right? I mean, who's the other one? The Washington Capitals. In 2019, we're basically a 1-3-1 team. It was fine. I didn't have a problem with it. That part of it anyway, I want to put to rest. The like watching the Kings is like watching paint dry. You know, look, the profile that the Kings have, just generally speaking, it's honestly not that dissimilar from Vancouver's at 5-on-5. It's just that Vancouver has higher end players doing it, and they have a little more down ice pressure.
Mm.
And a neutral zone wedge that's a little more inviting, right? But that's about it. Like, that's about it. The down ice pressure versus the lack of it.
For me, it's not so much about anything specific to the Kings, although obviously I do think they don't play a hyper-aggressive style, but it's just these matchups have not produced the most compelling games necessarily.
Right.
That's what it is.
I do think there's a particular stylistic clash between these two teams that is especially boring. But I think it's worth noting that in part, you know, why, in my view, is both of these teams are a little bit negative. Both of these teams, I think, are at their best when the other team is coming at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The Canucks are a great counterpunching team, right? They're like really good at jumping you early, and then as you apply pressure, they'll pick you apart with a mistake or two and build your lead. And if you're not careful, it can be 3-4-0 in a hurry. Kings do the same thing, just in a slightly different way. I think that's why. I think that fundamentally, there's a certain level of shared negativity. It's just that the Kings do it in a more unsightly way with less high-end talent, like Quinn Hughes, who, you know, despite the Canucks' loss last night, like, if you'd set Quinn Hughes' shifts to the Woody Woodpecker's soundtrack... you would have a good time. You know what I mean? Like, you would have a good time watching all his shifts. He was so smeagly last night. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah, and it's just, there's something about, you know, they're both such good defensive teams, right? That as soon as one's up on the other one, it's like, okay, this is going to be really, really difficult. Or even when the game was 1-1, it's going to be really difficult for the other team or either team to generate chances. And, you know, Rick Tocchet after the game basically said that, right? Like, what? There's 9 scoring chances either way. You know, basically a coin flip game. They got heads a few times and won. We didn't. We didn't execute, and that was the margin.
They're... Oh, nice.
Guess who?
Don't you want to watch Quinn Hughes' shifts set to this music? That's a good time.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
Quinn Hughes, now in Technicolor.
Yeah, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it, Wyatt, and ask for this. This is my one request a year of the stanchion. So, yeah, I mean, look, no matter how you slice it, shot suppression, expected goals against rate, goals against rate, the most important one. The Canucks and the Kings are both top 5
yeah.
defensive teams in hockey. And, you know, like them, those two teams in Carolina, it, you know, maybe the Flyers, if you wanted to throw them there, they're not quite at the same level. But one thing the Flyers do better than either the Kings or the Canucks is attack off the rush. Right, so they, on the one hand, they're maybe not to the same level of defensive staunchness,
mm-hmm.
but they might be a better counterpunching team than either. So, you know, that's kind of the profile of teams. It's not as if the Kings are the only club that the Canucks could face that's robust defensively, right? I just think ultimately, like Rick Tocchet described it as a coin flip game. We've now seen the Canucks. Like, the Canucks don't have a regulation win in 3 games against the Kings. They have 5 goals in 3 games. One it was a 4-on-3. You're not getting one of those in the playoffs. The other was a 6-on-5 deflection off Anze Kopitar's skate, right? So sort of 3 goals in 3 games, you know, in the ordinary run of play, excluding empty net scenarios. That's tough. And as I watched sort of that game unfold, you know, there's lots of things we could talk about. I mean, we could talk about the Besser interference call, which I actually thought was the sort of call that we're seeing a lot more around the league. I've been talking about it now for 2-3 weeks. Like, we're seeing a lot more of these pick plays
yep.
get whistled. It's not just the Canucks, but the Canucks throw a lot of picks. They do. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. It's fine. It's because, you know why they do it? Because they're really smart and they have the puck a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Anyway, it's frustrating when it happens, though. Especially because it looks in the moment like Besser's bracing for contact. But he's getting in the way. He knows what he's doing. He's Brock Besser. He's a smart player. The Quinn Hughes slash, that was the one that was appalling.
Yeah, that was bizarre. That was really bizarre.
I don't think he connected.
No. It's like the refs are getting all their penalties out before the playoffs. It's like, we can't call them then.
Yeah.
We gotta just call some right now.
2
gotta
minutes,
meet our quota.
2 minutes for genuflecting, which I'm only saying so Rick Dahl will ask to look it up. Anyway, that one shot in 15 minutes, right? Prior to the empty net getting, or the Casey DeSmith getting the pull to empty the Canucks net. That to me, like, you're trailing by 2, you're at home, you've got a chance to clinch. You've got to manage more shots than that. Like, you've got to manage more sustained pressure than that, especially when they're one shot. It's not like the Kings only had 2 shots in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So first of all, I mean, you don't want to get outshot in that situation. But like, one of them was a breakaway. The Kings were only taking kill shots. That's mm-hmm. why they weren't shooting. It's not like the Canucks had a breakaway that got stymied. It was harmless Pedersen
yeah,
wrist
they,
shot.
They weren't like piling up high danger chances in there if it just happened to miss the net.
Not yet.
Yeah.
They're not even high danger shot attempts.
Yeah.
You know, and this to me is sort of the one thing I've talked about it all season. I talked about it when the Canucks were leading the league in goals by a lot. 5-on-5 offensive push remains my biggest concern about the team. And you can go read my latest at The Athletic, by the way, which discusses this at length in the context of last night's game. Like, the Canucks currently are generating 26.7 shots per hour, 5-on-5. Okay, that ranks 26th in the NHL. These are the teams that they're ahead of. Washington, San Jose, Chicago, Detroit, Anaheim, Arizona, end of list. Not great company. This is the team they're behind. Montreal. Not great company, right? I just out of interest, last night as that third period was unfolding, I started looking it up. Right? 30 teams in the last 15 years, obviously, have made the Stanley Cup final. Two make it every year, Jamie. Only four have had fewer than 28 shots per hour as a five-on-five profile over the course of an entire season. And granted, there's some apples to oranges in here because some seasons are shorter than others due to lockouts and pandemics and whatnot. Those teams, even if you sort of go within those teams, it's like the 2019 Caps. Okay, so that was a 1-3-1 team, first of all. Secondly, they were 29-plus after acquiring Michael Kempney, and people might roll their eyes. Michael Kempney, what? He played top pair. He played with John Carlson for the Caps. Like, he was a huge ad for that team, even if it seems weird. And then the Pittsburgh Penguins in the year they won, 2009. But they were at 35 after the coaching change. They went from, like, dull hockey under Michel Therrien to high-octane hockey under Dan Bylsma, and it completely changed the complexion of the team. So the two cup winners in that sample you'd sort of look at as being, like, a little bit different, right? Like, there's context sort of explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
The other two were the Penguins the year before, so this is really a Michel Therrien stat, and then the 2012 Devils. I mean, that's not the company you want to keep.
No, not ideally.
In terms of like, what's the upside case for a team that shoots like this? Now, you know, it's not as if all the best offensive teams just win the cup or anything. You know what I mean? But like, we have seen 10 of the last 20 cup finalists were in the top five in shots for. Six of the last 20 cup finalists were in the top five for shot attempts. So that would be the Canucks, right? Or shot suppression.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm not here to do the, like, defense wins championships or, like, you need a good offense. Like,
well,
you need to do both.
Yeah, you need to be balanced. I mean, that's what you see traditionally, like, not just the NHL, across sports.
Yes.
You need to be able to play two ways at a high level,
100%.
Right? That's what it comes down to.
And well, it helps to have a calling card.
Yes.
You know, like, it helps to have a calling card, but you need more. And the Canucks, I think, can this, like, by no means am I saying it's like fate that the Canucks' inability to generate shots is going to be a problem for them as they, you know, aspire to go on a 2.5 month run that could capture our imaginations and the imaginations of this market. I still think this team has that ceiling, or at least an outside shot at reaching that ceiling. But I think what we saw last night a little bit was how it can look like if you don't get that early lead. Which this team's
they've done it a lot.
They've scored
an early lead. Yeah.
First 5 minutes, 20 plus times. I think it's 21. If you don't get that, right, if you fall behind, and then the team gets a weird bounce, like a puck deflecting off Carson Soucy's skate three times and into the net. And, you know, I didn't think the third one, I know it bounced off Quinn Hughes. It's not like the finish the finish was a bit fortunate. But that shift was dominant by the top line. Like, they came in with pace and space and took full advantage and, you know, peppered to Smith and ultimately were able to get to a loose puck and poke it home. Like, to me, that's not lucky. That's, they took a can opener to the Canucks defense. Anyway, that happens. Do you have answers? The Canucks didn't. Like, flat out, the Canucks didn't last night. And this, to me, is just, like, we've seen over the course of the year how many outs this team has. Demko playing great.
Yep.
Their stars taking over. The power play performing well, right? Their defensive shell. The depth scoring that carried them at points in this season. And frankly, last night, like, their bottom six was great last night. Obviously, Sam Lafferty getting the highlight reel goal. But if you're not generating shots, you're not generating danger. You're not generating a sustained, consistent offensive push. It just narrows your path. When the leverage of these games ramps up. And that sort of remains a concern for me.
And I do want to zero in on that 3-1 Kings goal for a second here, because I think it ties into something. So Gary in Maple Ridge texts in, what I saw of the Canucks last night and recently is the fact that a few of the forwards don't play talk-it hockey well. And then he goes on to say, and we definitely need two bigger wingers if we want to compete against the bigger, bulkier teams. And I've seen a lot of reaction to last night's game that basically amounts to the Canucks don't have enough size up front. For games like that, they're not big enough. Now, look, we talked about the size up front thing yesterday on the show. Would you love to have a few bigger, bulkier guys up front? Yeah, you absolutely would. But I don't draw a line between that and the team's struggles to score last night. Like, I didn't watch that game and think, oh, the Canucks are getting out-muscled by the LA Kings. They're not in the same physical weight class as the LA Kings, and that's why they're struggling to score goals. Yeah, they have Nils Höglander and Connor Garland on a line together, but it wasn't like Höglander and Garland weren't getting to dangerous areas because they're small.
Sorry, they were also Vancouver's two best forwards along the wall all game long. Like, Garland was winning 50-50s, you know, the way that I eat cereal.
And I think that
quickly
that,
and often.
That LA 3-1 goal, like, Kopitar scores from a dirty area, but again, it wasn't that they outmuscled the Canucks, it was that they broke down their structure, right? That goal came after a lot of nice passing far from the net, around the perimeter. It wasn't a question of being the bigger, bulkier team that allowed Anze Kopitar to do that. It was the fact that, as you said, they had that offensive possession, they were zipping the puck around, that broke the Canucks down and allowed them to get to the dangerous areas of the ice. I don't disagree at all that the Canucks need to do, in those types of games, need to find a way to get to the front of the net, to get to the blue paint. But I think it's a mistake to think that the only way to do that is by being a bigger physical winger, right? Like, and I think just that LA Kings goal, look at it again, didn't have a lot to do with physicality. It had a lot to do with zipping the puck around and breaking things down. That's what the Canucks failed to do last night. It's not that they got pushed around or pushed out of the blue paint.
I'd add too that I thought Vancouver's size played. Like, I thought,
They were super, especially the blue line was super physical.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
First of all, it was a physical game that favored Vancouver in terms of the volume of physical play, of hits thrown. You know, there were some, like, good battle shifts between Miller and Kempe, who fought previously. I wondered if they might go again. You know, I also thought that the size of Vancouver's blue line, you know, LA plays negative hockey, but typically they're able to sustain down-low shifts. And they weren't last night. Like, Zadorov had that huge hit on Lizotte. Podkolzin, obviously, like, overwhelmed Victor Arvidsson. Victor Arvidsson, like, credit to him, because unlike Garland and Höglander, who I thought were winning a ton of battles on the wall, like, I thought Victor Arvidsson had a tough night with the physicality of Vancouver's blue line. But he kept coming. He was losing a lot of the battles, but he kept going to those areas. So credit to him, right? Especially in the NHL game against men as large as Zadorov, like, credit to you, you know. So, I mean, honestly, I thought the Canucks for large stretches of the game looked like the better team, and I would say their skilled smaller forwards had far fewer moments, you know, on their tookish with the opponent skating away from the puck than LA's
Again,
skilled smaller guys.
It was a structure win for LA, not a we're bullying you out of the zone win.
I actually think Vancouver's size had a bigger impact on LA than LA's had on Vancouver.
So I think we all agree you got to get to the dangerous areas more often. I just, and I'm not even saying, like, size doesn't matter in this, they couldn't use more bigger forwards. I just think, don't just jump to that conclusion because they didn't get a lot of high danger scoring chances last night. There were other ways they could go about it, and you even saw it from LA a little bit there with the goal that they scored. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep getting yours in. Nothing to hit on the broadsheet today. In the lineup notes for the whiteboard, no practice today as the Canucks still, you know, manage ice time and all of that with this lengthy homestand. They've got the 2 days off before they play Dallas on Thursday, so we'll see them back on the ice tomorrow, I'm sure, but no practice today. Rick Tocchet spoke pregame yesterday after our show, and the update on Lindholm was day-to-day, but also there was some, I don't know, ambivalence, or just, it wasn't a straight day-to-day, right? It was, well, we're managing it, we'll see, we're waiting for some information.
Yeah.
So that remains a very interesting one to monitor.
The availability was too early after our show for me to get there for it. But to quote Ben Kuzma's Twitter feed, our colleague at Post Media, somewhat maintenance, and we've got to look at some stuff and evaluate every day. I don't know at this point about it.
Yeah.
And then Kuzma adds, as a paraphrase, in brackets, shutting him down. So that's, I assume, the context. To be honest, it's about feel, and we'll see how it shapes out day to day. Which is a good way to make everyone say it's day-to-day while also saying a lot more than that. Right?
Yes.
So,
not your typical day-to-day update.
And not your typical Tocchet update, which is a fascinating one here,
which
too.
Is typically, I need to speak to the doctors.
It's either that or he's laughing about the fact that he can't just,
in an
adult way, disclose what's going on. Right? Like, this was a little bit more, at least the way it reads, because, again, I wasn't there. the copy of it seems a little more tactful, a little more politically cautious than what we're used to seeing from Tockett.
And by the way, also just in terms of lineup notes, roster news, I just see a quote here from David Quadrelli at Canucks Army, who I think is out at Abbotsford practice talking to Jonathan Lekaramäki. And Quad says, Jonathan Lekaramäki says he will be in Abbotsford for 2 to 3 weeks. Jeremy Colliton said he wasn't sure if he'd get into a game this weekend and that the next step is for the Canucks top prospect to get comfortable. So based on that kind of paraphrasing from David Quadrelli, sounds like maybe a little bit more likely that Lekaramäki can get some game action for Abbotsford at some point, although we'll see where that one goes. Playoff forecast, the loss drops the Canucks all the way down to just a mere 83% chance to win the division. So, look, Oilers still alive, but the Canucks still very, very much in the driver's seat in that one.
Canucks would have to hit a serious skid.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if you go look at it, like, one thing that I think is worth noting, like I was telling you about this when I came in today, right? If you look at it since the Lindholm trade, which is effectively since the All-Star break, right? Canucks played 23 games, 12 wins, 11 losses. Not great, right? If you exclude all empty net situations, plus one goal differential, all situations, that's mid. All situations, which is not usually how I use PDO, 99.4. Right. So this has been a regressive stint for a team that's had a lot of things going their way, to paraphrase Jim Rutherford. And yet it's a 0.587 point percentage for the team over the course of that run. Oilers are just over 600. That's not a big enough gap.
No,
like the Oilers
not
have
even
had
close. Yeah.
The Oilers have had too many, like Buffalo, Columbus, Ottawa losses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it. You get if they'd gotten 3 or 4 points out of those games, we'd be in a race.
Mm-hmm.
But the Oilers slipped up, you know, not as much as the Canucks have since the All-Star break, but close enough that the Canucks should be able to pretty comfortably run out this clock and avoid game 80 meaning a ton.
The other thing, of course, if you're looking for a bright spot from last night, the Kings winning actually makes a first-round playoff matchup between the Canucks and the Kings less likely because it keeps them ahead of Vegas, who did beat St. Louis last night. So Vegas is basically home and free here.
So the entire Lower Mainland exhales.
Yes. Yeah.
Except me, because I'd much rather travel to LA.
You don't want to go to Nashville.
I don't want to go to Nashville. I also like, how much of the Vegas Blues game did you watch?
Not much.
Okay. Because I was tracking it closely because I felt it was part of the story.
Yeah.
Right? Vegas looked awful.
I want to do like a big playoff, not even just like first round playoff matchup, but just like opponents deep dive.
We
here.
Should totally do a segment,
yeah.
Even today,
like next segment. Yeah,
yeah. Like I'm down because we're in that part of the year.
It's getting really interesting.
It's like
also
trade speculation, but it's
but
hockey.
Meaningful.
Yeah, let's go. No, I'm serious. I'm gonna tease my take for the next segment.
Yeah.
The Predators are more dangerous than
so
Vegas.
Vegas now, just in terms of playoff forecast, now with a 96% chance to make it per Dom's model.
Yeah,
they're
making it.
Basically home and free. They have a 74% chance of finishing fourth in the Pacific. So even them jumping up to third is getting a lot less likely at this point.
But it is only 2 points.
It's a possibility.
It's only 2 points.
Yeah, it's a possibility, but it would be less likely. So that's the state of the playoff race in the Western Conference. The 8 teams basically set now. Anything you want to hit quickly before we go to break here in the betting odds?
Yeah, I mean, we'll just, in terms of tomorrow's game, Thursday's game against the Stars, I'll just see if the line's open. No, it's not.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, it ain't open. So, yeah, no, I got nothing. Gambling odds.
All right.
Quinn Hughes going to win the Norris.
Are you gonna come clean and admit that it was you putting $20,000 bets on Jonte Porter unders? Are you going to exonerate him?
Okay, listen.
I knew it.
Listen.
Trans is like, that's my bad, guys. Things got a little out of hand here.
Listen. No one, and I mean no one, loves betting random NBA injury replacement guy overs.
I can vouch for this.
Than me.
We've had a lot of conversations pre-show about those exact situations that you're laddering.
Oh,
at
yeah.
This time of year, too.
Dude, the amount of hits I've had on Boston Celtics reserve players, because you know how, like, right now Boston's rotating, like, Tatum out.
Yeah.
You know, like, I legitimately have had like Luke Kornet rebound ladders that hit, Shvi Mihalik 3-point ladders that hit. You don't even want to know this hit on Sam Hauser. I am gambling like a Boston uncle in terms of the amount that I'm wagering on Celtics white dudes. It's wild. So it seems like something I should have done, but I didn't.
There you go. The official statement from Thomas Drantz. Yeah. I was not involved in the Jontae Porter under scandal.
I was too busy losing money on Io Donsumo points over or 3-point overs. So it goes.
There it goes. All right. On that note, we'll take a break. Lots more to come. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll talk to Sean Gentile at 1, but open segment up next year on the show. So get your texts in. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.